This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday afternoon, March 30th, 2021, on 91.3 KUAF, your public radio station, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you for your support during this first bit of our spring fundraiser. Ahead this hour, what it was like to produce a play in front of a live audience after a year without patrons. Morgan Hicks, the director of Theater Squared's Murder for Two, will talk to us about the experience. And after our show on Here and Now from NPR, President Ronald Reagan was seriously wounded in an assassination attempt 40 years ago this week. A look back at that event and President Reagan's legacy. And author Cal Newport imagines a better way to get work done with less time buried under email and other messages. Those stories and the latest news on Here and Now tomorrow afternoon at 1, right after the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Arkansas lawmakers yesterday agreed to Governor Hutchinson's request to extend the state's COVID-19 pandemic emergency. The governor appeared before the Arkansas Legislative Council to ask for the extension as part of a new law passed this session requiring legislative approval for such extensions. The governor says the 60-day extension will allow 5 executive orders to remain in place, including those regarding telehealth and access to healthcare resources and immunity for healthcare workers. The governor is scheduled to address the state this afternoon at about 1:30. A measure to bar Arkansas transgender youth from receiving gender-affirming medical care was approved by the Arkansas legislature yesterday. HB 1570, titled Save Adolescents from Experimentation, or SAFE Act, passed 28-7 in the state Senate, this after the House approved the bill earlier in the month. It now heads to Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson's desk for his signature. Last week, Governor Hutchinson signed a bill barring trans girls and women from participating in public school and college sports, and another bill allowing medical providers to refuse to treat LGBTQ patients based on moral or religious beliefs. For the second consecutive day, the Arkansas Department of Health is reporting fewer than 100 newly diagnosed cases of COVID-19. There were 79 new cases reported, with 6 newly reported fatal cases. Hospitalizations, now 164, dropped by 7. Active cases were reduced by 172. The state reports about 16.5% of Arkansans 16 and older have been fully immunized. Another 14% have been partially immunized. The lower numbers in Arkansas are tempered by concerns voiced yesterday from CDC officials that national trends indicate there could be another surge of cases if proper precautions and behaviors aren't observed. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman is encouraging every Arkansan eligible for a vaccination to get a shot. The senator, who is seeking a third term in 2022, says mass vaccinations are important for a return to normal as quickly as possible. Today, Senator Bozeman is meeting with Arkansas's Secretaries of Health and Education to discuss vaccination distribution in the state. The average gallon of gasoline in Arkansas is $2.68. That's according to the survey group Gas Buddy. The price about 2 cents cheaper than last week, but still 95 cents a gallon higher than this time last year. This week's price is 2 cents cheaper than the average price per gallon of gas in Arkansas 2 years ago this week. The Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team's deepest run in the NCAA tournament in a quarter century now over. Arkansas lost to Baylor by 9 points last night in the round of 8. Arkansas's baseball team, ranked number 1 in the country, scheduled to host Central Arkansas tonight in Baum Stadium. 60% chance of rain tonight, with the best opportunities for showers or thunderstorms before 10. Lows tonight in the upper 30s in northwest Arkansas, mid-40s in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, clouds ending around midday, with highs from the mid-50s to near 60. This is Ozarks at Large for a Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for joining us. We are continuing today to encourage you to make a financial contribution, if it's your turn, to your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. Your contribution keeps this radio station strong and independent and keeps us producing quite the rarity in public radio, especially in a region this size, a daily committed show to news, politics, humanities, music, and the events of the region where you live. We are committed to this program. We've been doing it on a daily basis for close to 11 years now, and we couldn't have done it without your support in the beginning and continuing now. If you would like to continue your support, you can do so at supportkuaf.com. If you have never been a member of KUAF, perhaps you've not been in a position until now to make a contribution, you can do that as well at supportkuaf.com. All contributions made during this hour of Ozarks at Large help us meet a challenge from our friends Dick and Caroline Smith of Rogers of $250 today. We have until the end of this Tuesday afternoon edition of Ozarks at Large to collectively put together $250. They will match it. It will mean $500 that goes to KUAF's bank account and helps us pay the lighting bills, pay for the tower, pay the salaries, pay for the computers and the batteries and the personnel that it takes to put this radio station on the air and to put Ozarks at Large on the air 6 days a week. You can make your contribution right now at supportkuaf.com. From all of us at KUAF and from your fellow listeners who have contributed, thank you very much. This weekend, a Stop Asian Hate vigil was held in Bentonville to coincide with a National Day of Action and Healing. The event was held on Friday to coincide with March 26, 1790, when the Naturalization Act was signed into law, prohibiting non-white people from becoming citizens of the United States. The national call to action came in response to the mass shootings in Georgia on March 16th and the wave of assaults against Asian Americans across the country during the last year of the COVID-19 pandemic after the virus was first identified in China. But the local vigil took on a new meaning after a former Bentonville fire captain was accused of assaulting an Asian man in Hot Springs. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek attended the event, and she has this report.
Hee Yoon Jung Grant was a single mother who would sometimes sleep at the spa because she worked so hard that she thought it would be easier for her to just stay there.
Monica Kumar reads the names of the eight people who were killed earlier this month when a man went on a shooting rampage at three spas in Atlanta, Georgia.
Sao Ji Tan was a business owner and beloved mother who worked 12 hours a day to provide for her family.
Six of the victims were women of Asian descent, stirring outrage and fear in Asian American communities across the country.
Dana Ashley Yawn was 33. She had been married less than a year. She left behind a 13-year-old son and a 9-month-old daughter.
The vigil is held on the green outside the Momentary. And the neon sign outside the arts venue that reads, "You belong here," is not lit up that evening.
The truth is that right now many people in America and in Northwest Arkansas are questioning if they belong here and if they're safe. And this really breaks my heart, and I know because you're here, it breaks yours too.
Kumar organized the event with Gayatri Agnew, who says she is first and foremost a citizen of Bentonville, but she's also a member of the Bentonville City Council after winning the race for Ward 1 last year.
I've had a really rough week, I guess, week plus, since the incident in Atlanta. I'm Asian American, and I've just been deeply impacted and really emotional about what I've been seeing, what I've been hearing, what's been in the press, you know, stories that make you realize that could have been my grandmother, that could have been my father, that could have been my sister. And I just needed to do something.
Then, just a couple of days before the vigil, Agnew says the incidence of hate crimes against Asian Americans hit much closer to home.
When we heard about the incident that occurred in Hot Springs related to a public employee in Bentonville, we absolutely had to do something. And so I think that prompted the organizing of this evening's vigil. And it's really important to recognize this is not a rally. This is not a protest. This is a space to honor the pain and the reality of how racism shows up in everyday life in America, and to make space for that.
Hours before the vigil, former fire captain Benjamin Snodgrass resigned from the Bentonville Fire Department. Snodgrass was charged with misdemeanor battery and public intoxication following a March 13th incident outside the Oaklawn Casino in Hot Springs. According to a report from Hot Springs Police, officers were called to the scene by Liam Nguyen, who had a red mark below one of his eyes, a torn shirt, and a scratch on his knee when they arrived. Nguyen says Snodgrass approached him as he was walking outside the casino. Snodgrass asked Nguyen if he knew he was in America and started to push him. The two fell to the ground, and Nguyen hit Snodgrass in self-defense as the former fire captain punched him in the face. When police spoke with Snodgrass outside the casino, he told them he was drunk and admitted to confronting Nguyen about not being American, but insisted nothing had happened. Officers noted Snodgrass had blood on his left ear and lips and redness on both his knuckles. Nguyen, who is Vietnamese, told KATV reporter Marine Glisovic this when she interviewed him last week, as the details of the incident made headlines across the state.
Let me mind my own business. I don't want no trouble. And then he got up, walking towards me and say, "Your kind of people is not supposed to be here. I'm going to kill you and kill your kind of people."
Snodgrass has since pleaded not guilty to the charges, and his trial is set for May 6th in Garland County District Court. According to the city of Bentonville, Snodgrass had been employed by the fire department since 2007. A statement released by Debbie Griffin, a spokeswoman for the city, says he, quote, expressed regret and an apology for any embarrassment to his family, fellow firefighters, friends, and the city of Bentonville. Gayatri Agnew says Snodgrass's resignation is an important first step.
For me, when I learned of the incident, I was shocked. I was saddened. But mostly I was curious to understand how we might, as a community, as a city, recognize in that incident an opportunity to reiterate our commitment to having no tolerance for hate and violence.
Agnew says she also wants everyone in Bentonville's Asian American community to not be afraid to call the city's fire and police departments.
I want you to know and to trust your city and your community. And I think we cannot say that enough, because public service at the end of the day is about that trust. And we as a city leadership community need to communicate to all residents and all citizens in Bentonville that you can have confidence in your city's leadership.
Following news of the arrest, Mayor Stephanie Orman released a statement saying, quote, "The city of Bentonville does not condone or tolerate any form of discrimination or violence. In fact, we have worked hard with the formation of a diversity, equity, and inclusion task force, both in the community and internally as a staff, to make sure that everyone has a voice, they are heard, and feel welcome and protected in our community. We will continue our work to make Bentonville an inclusive, safe, and welcoming environment for all." Agnew says the city's public servants should be held to a higher standard, which is why Snodgrass being off duty when the incident in Hot Springs took place is irrelevant.
I think a racially motivated violent incident is a racially motivated violent incident. And I would actually argue it doesn't even matter that he worked for the city or not, right? To have that incident take place in our state, in our community, needs to be a wake-up call to everybody that violence and racism shows up everywhere in America today. There is not a community that does not struggle with and experience these issues. And when we pretend that it doesn't, then we are helpless to do anything about it. When we acknowledge that it does and we build allies amongst leaders, amongst citizens, private and public leaders, then we can do something about it.
Although Agnew and many others have referred to the attack on Liam Nguyen as a hate crime, the state's criminal justice system has not, because Arkansas is one of three states without any hate crime laws, which enhance penalties for crimes that target people because of their race, color, religion, ethnicity, age, gender, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity. And while Governor Asa Hutchinson and Attorney General Leslie Rutledge have both endorsed passing a hate crimes bill during this year's legislative session, bills that were filed before the session began remain stalled. Agnew had this message for lawmakers who have about a month left in the session.
Pass a hate crimes law. I mean, this man could have been my brother. This man could have been my father, for any of us, right? And he was attacked not because of what he did, but because of who he is. And when we stand for and allow for and tolerate who we are, to be a motivator or an incentive for violence. We are not living into a beloved community, and we are not living into the society we can be. I think it's a national embarrassment that Arkansas doesn't have a hate crimes law.
And while she takes issue with state lawmakers, Agnew says Bentonville Mayor Stephanie Orman deserves credit for the work she's been doing to live up to the city's diversity, equity, and inclusion goals.
We have a citizen group in place. We need to leverage that citizen group to provide the city with advice and guidance about what next steps ought to be. I think training could be an avenue that we pursue. I will actually give our law enforcement officials in Bentonville a lot of credit. I think they acted swiftly in this incident. They took it very seriously. I have the utmost confidence in our fire chief and in city leadership, but I do think this incident calls on us to say, what else can we do? What else should we do? But I don't think training's enough, frankly, right? You do one training and you kind of wash your hands of it and move on to the next thing. I think this is more systemic than that, and we need to ask how we can manage that systemic change over the long run. But we need to do something.
One of those somethings is the vigil on the momentary green. Agnew sees it as a way of letting everyone in the Bentonville community know that they are not alone.
And no one in this community should fear who they are and showing up in this community as who they are. And that applies to race and everything else. So I think the most important thing is I don't want anyone in Bentonville or anywhere to feel a sense of fear about who they are and showing up that way. But the other thing is I want folks to have a sense of hope. And I want folks to see the allyship that exists here in our community. I think it can feel a little bit invisible, but I know it's present. I know it's present in our city leadership. I know that nobody wants racism, violence, and hate to have a place in our community. And the only way to make sure that it doesn't is to call it out and make sure we don't tolerate it.
And Agnew had this advice for those who are wondering what they can do to further that goal.
I think the best thing anyone can do is to proactively seek to have an experience with someone who is different than them. I know in COVID that can be hard. It can be as simple as attending an event or a festival to the extent that that's appropriate, seeking to understand. And that process of seeking to understanding, that's where we actually break down barriers. And that's where we actually begin to understand that despite the differences we all have, there's a shared humanity that is really important to allow to come through.
The vigil included a performance of This Land Is Your Land and a group recitation of the poem I Too by Langston Hughes. For Ozarks at Large,
I Too Sing America.
I'm Zuzanna Sitek.
I am the darker brother they send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes. But I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody will dare say to me, eat in the kitchen. Then besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I too am America.
Still to come on this hour of Ozarks at Large, wildlife biologists are watching a disease that's affecting one migratory bird in the Ozarks and could spread to others. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has that report in our second half hour. And a visit with the militant grammarian who's talking about a different kind of wildlife, kangaroos, or kangaroo words. She'll explain later on today's show. This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas's pandemic emergency is being extended for another 60 days after lawmakers gave the governor's request approval yesterday. This week, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, discusses the continuation with John Brummett, political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. They also talk about new candidates announced for the 2022 elections and the remaining business for the Arkansas legislature. Roby asked John Brummett if he thinks the 60-day extension of a public health emergency is warranted.
Oh, yeah, I think certainly. That would almost go without saying that the emergency authority, the emergency situation, needs to be declared still in existence while the virus is still in existence and there are needs. It makes sense. And particularly in that, as I understand this particular extension, it's limited to mostly to ability to assist businesses and to delay the tax deadline, things that shouldn't be that controversial. And it sounds like I didn't, you covered it, you told me about it, 2 hours of jawing about legislative desire to be a part of this discussion, but it really came, I guess, to nothing in the end. A motion not to deny passed. Okay. Sounds good to me. Thank you for your time. Yeah, that was good. Okay.
Whatever it takes to get there. What do you expect from the legislature now that they're back from spring break? What do you expect to happen over the next 30 days or so? We still have a couple more weeks of the session. There still is a lot of business of state government to be done. Are we going to start focusing on that, or do you think we're going to stay with the same social and cultural issues that have really dominated this legislative session?
Well, I don't know. There was a time when I had a great feel for legislatures and could tell you what was going to happen, largely because the people running them would tell me what was going to happen. And you know who the best sources have been over the years. I don't have those so much anymore, and I don't understand a lot of what's going on out there much anymore. I do know that normally, by the standard rhythm of a session, you get to this point, people start wanting to go home. They want spring is springing. They're tired of being in Little Rock. They have done whatever mischief they came to do, and it's time to start cranking out these appropriation bills and other essential business, deciding your constitutional amendments, getting your Revenue Stabilization Act worked on, and getting out of town. That's what used to happen, and that's probably largely what the rhythm will provide this time. But there's still some bills out there. There's some voter suppression bills out there. They're billed to take away the right of the county clerk to run an election in a county's over 50,000 population so that the more partisan election commission could do it, to do away with Monday early voting. The creation science, teach creation science, that's still pending in the education committee. How come that can't get movement in this current culture war environment? There's a transgender bill still there, the one about how you address a transgender student in terms of their birth certificate and what they want to be called and what you choose to call them. There's still opportunity for there to be a dynamic mix of getting the real business done and throwing in an occasional bit of mischief. And I guess that's what we probably should expect.
All right. Over the weekend, we get the announcement of a Democratic candidate for governor, Sufa Mays, says he's going to enter the race here. And I think there was also a minister from Stuttgart says he's going to challenge John Bozeman in the U.S. Senate race. Neither one of these candidates come to the race with any political history, so to speak, in terms of a base. Do we think anything changes in the trajectory of the Senate race and the governor's race? Is it still just a John Bozeman and a Sarah Huckabee, although Leslie Rutledge would like to change that narrative? Does anything change in the dynamics of those races?
I don't think so. It's all just decided. The Bozeman stuff is decidedly odd. Bozeman is just your standard do what the Republican Party wants. He's got a perfectly fine conservative voting record. Yet he's got two opponents from the extreme right, as if he's been some kind of Mitt Romney or something. It's all comical. The Republican voters of Arkansas know better than that. And don't doubt John Bozeman's strength at the polling place. I've doubted it before, finding him kind of a mild, meek, not substantial candidate, and he turns out to be, while mild and meek, fully substantial. Governor, you know, I'm glad the Democrats have got some candidates. They've got to have, and I don't want to minimize anybody who's got the guts to put their name on the ballot, but it's the Democrats are, we know the truth, they're badly up against it in Arkansas. There was the changing dynamic, and I'll mention this only briefly, was that I and others have been hyping this notion of an independent candidate who could compete for a third or more of the electorate. That seems to be losing traction. A lot of people are saying it just won't work. You're not going to beat Sarah Sanders by splitting the opposition two ways. I see a lessening of interest in that. And Sarah Sanders, I think polls still show her dominating Leslie Rutledge. Despite Leslie Rutledge's wrapping yourself in the Star Spangled Banner and moments of silence and whatever else. So at present, allowing for the fact that there are everybody who runs should be praised for running, and we will let these races play out. Right now, I see two anointings for governor and U.S. Senate right now.
John Brummett is a political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and his columns can be found at ArkansasOnline.com. He speaks with Roby Brock, who is with our partner Talk Business and Politics, almost every week. And more from the conversation can be found at TalkBusiness.net.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. When caring for a seriously ill loved one, the journey shouldn't be taken alone. Circle of Life Hospice can help. Services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance. No one is turned away based on an inability to pay. 750-6632 or NWACircleOfLife.com for more. Arkansas PBS presents American Portrait, Achieving Civil Discourse Through Storytelling, Wednesday, March 31st at 6 p.m. This free virtual event highlights the role personal stories play in civil discourse through a screening and discussion with guests from StoryCorps, Snap Judgment, The Moth, and others. myarkansaspbs.org/American Portrait for more.
This is Ozarks Large. Thanks for spending part of your Tuesday with us. Still to come on our show today, Murder for Two is the most recent production by Theater Squared. It's available only online, but there was a doubly vaccinated audience in the house when it was filmed. We'll talk with Morgan Hicks, the director of Murder for Two, about what it was like to experience laughter from an audience in person once again. That's ahead on this Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large. Right now, I'm going to remind you that the reason we can bring you stories about theater, about the legislature, about the environment right here on Ozarks at Large, the reason we can do that is you. You have kept us strong on Ozarks at Large as a daily show for 11 years, as a show on the radio for 31 years, and KUAF as a public radio station for 35 years. You've kept us strong with your financial contributions. Public radio depends on listeners, and at KUAF, more than three-fourths of our budget comes from local listeners and local businesses, people right here who listen to and use 91.3 KUAF. We've made it very easy to make a contribution. You can go to supportkuaf.com. We remain on lockdown at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Only staff inside, no volunteers answering phones. But you can go to the website, supportkuaf.com. And if you haven't given yet and you'd like to right now, well, you could help us meet today's Ozarks at Large challenge from Dick and Caroline Smith of Rogers. They gave us a challenge yesterday. It's a $250 challenge today. If all of us working together, perhaps, what would that be, 25 at $10 or one person at $250? If we all work together and raise $250 from new members, renewed members, gift memberships, during this hour of Ozarks at Large, we'll meet that challenge. You can make your contribution in the amount you choose at supportkuaf.com. 91.3 KUAF, your source for national and international news from NPR and from local and regional news right here on our daily news magazine, Ozarks at Large. From the impact of DACA on young people in Northwest Arkansas to the increasing enrollment numbers at the U of A, we're shining a bright light on the people and institutions of Western and Northwest Arkansas, as well as parts of Oklahoma and Missouri. On this show, we bring you stories from all over the listening area, in-depth reports you won't hear anywhere else. From stories about area utility companies sending crews to Texas and Florida to help with outages because of storms that affected power grids, to the impact of Washington County's hazardous waste program, what you hear on Ozarks at Large, made possible by the financial support of KUAF listeners. If you're able right now, make a contribution to Ozarks at Large and your public radio station, KUAF, at supportkuaf.com. Whatever you're able to give will go towards our challenge from Dick and Caroline Smith, great friends and supporters of KUAF and Ozarks at Large. The challenge started earlier this hour at $250. We've made some inroads. We'd love to hear from you at supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
Hi, my name is Hallie, and I live near Tacoma, Washington. On Wednesday, January 6th, I was watching armed insurgents attempt to take the U.S. Capitol, as well as the governor's mansion here in Washington state. I was watching this unfold through the tweets of my local public radio reporters. I wanted to do something to let them know that I saw them and I appreciated their hard work. And so I put out a tweet asking if there was any way that a concerned listener could buy pizza for the staff of my local public radio station. We quickly had dozens of people raising their hands saying, "I'm in, where can I send my money?" Within maybe 24 hours, we had raised enough to buy a pizza for every single member of the staff of the local radio station. And we got to watch lots of photos and thank yous all night long of happy reporters eating pizza. You don't have to buy every public radio reporter a pizza to show your appreciation for their work. There's an easier way to do that. Give to this NPR station right now.
No pizza required from you, just your ears, your eyes if you go to our website, and if you're able, your financial contribution. You best know what you can afford and how much you use this information resource. If you appreciate Ozarks at Large and 91.3 KUAF, you can go right now to supportkuaf.com and make a financial contribution to keep us independent, strong, and keep this daily resource of local, state, and regional news coming to you. And if you contribute right now in any amount, no matter the status of your past contributions to KUAF, it counts towards our $250 challenge from Dick and Caroline Smith of Rogers, Arkansas. You can make the contribution right now at supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
Now, more than ever, great public radio is at your fingertips. But what if you didn't have to lift a finger to hear the public radio you love? Now you can, with your smart speaker. Listen live or to KUAF podcast whenever you want. You can even hear our HD and online stations, KUAF 2 and KUAF 3. Staying informed is just as simple as asking your smart speaker to play KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Theater Squared's latest production, Murder for Two, is a reprise of a sold-out 2016 show, T2, presented at Nadine Baum Studios. This 2021 version, recorded at the new T2 Theater, makes allowances for the pandemic and can only be viewed online. But it was filmed in front of a doubly vaccinated, socially distant audience. Morgan Hicks, the director of the production, recently talked to us about what it was like to have an audience for the first time in a year.
This was really the first time that we were able to invite any people from the public into the space with, you know, quite a few caveats of safety protocols to get them in there. Everybody had to be vaccinated, double vaccinated, with a waiting period, and wearing masks and socially distanced. But we were able to get a handful of people in there. And I think that it's important for a show like this that really like craves an audience to be able to have a few people that haven't been watching it over and over and over again every night. Just to be able to have the actors have somebody to respond to.
How many productions did you do with people in seats?
We had two performances. So we were primarily preparing the show to go on tape to stream. And so in order to get that, you know, that on tape, we needed a couple of different performances to edit. So we were able to invite audiences into two performances.
As a director, because you have a live audience, but you know this is going to be distributed digitally, what are you telling your actors to do? Where are they looking? Is it any different than if it were just a live audience and not digitally distributed?
This show, the nature of the show, they did play to the audience a lot when we had a full house. And so there were a couple of times when we had to make adjustments and we said, okay, instead of playing to the audience live, let's play this to the camera. And I'm trying to invite the audience that's going to be at home into this moment. So we did a couple of adjustments to camera. But for the most part, we kept the blocking and just made adjustments to where, you know, which camera was going to be capturing those images instead of reblocking to the camera, if that makes sense. Yeah. So we pretty much tried to keep the full, like the feel of the show and the full live show and just capture it, capture a beautiful archive of it.
It seems as though T2 has been imagining what theater can be during a pandemic and afterward. What have the conversations been like among you and your colleagues there in the last 12 months?
I think that's a good question. I feel like we've had maybe more reflective conversations in this last 12 months than we have in a few years. I feel like we've been, we've had large projects, we've had large building projects and large, you know, shifts in ideas, over the last decade. And we've always been kind of aspiring and building towards something. And this pandemic has given us a little bit of a chance to reflect on the work that we've done and reflect on where we want to grow and how we want to engage in our community, and the kind of conversations that our community wants to be having. We've had large conversations with sort of the national stage and what theater should be doing for, you know, communities across the nation and lifting up voices that have historically not had had representation. And so I feel like those are the kind of conversations that we've been talking about, is when we come back, what do we come back to and how do we want to serve the community, which has always been our motivation. But we're not on autopilot at all anymore. I mean, if we ever were, but we're definitely not now.
Were you in the building when the two productions with people in the audience? What's that like? What's it like to be in a room with like more than three people?
Oh, I know. It was scary. I think that like it's going to be a little while before we're 100% kind of used to being around people again, and then being in rooms with bodies again. And we kind of talked about that. Like I had conversations in the lobby with people of just like, this is weird. We're out of our homes and we're doing something that used to be so normal. Like I used to go to see a play once a week. I mean, that was very, very common. At the minimum. And so not having had a chance to see many plays over the last 12 months, it's going to take a minute for it to be back to normal. But hopefully faster. Hopefully we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and we're going to be able to burst those doors open and invite people in mass again. Hopefully squeezing it in, breathing that air and feeling really safe and comfortable. That's key.
Morgan Hicks directed the digital production of Murder for Two from Theater Squared. The performance is available through April 25th at theater2.org. She talked to us via Zoom earlier this month. Wildlife biologists are issuing advisories about an infectious disease killing a certain migratory songbird, which could possibly spread to other birds. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Kelly Mulholland stands in front of what was a very busy bird feeding station at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville this sunny early spring afternoon.
But this is rather sad. We're standing here in front of it, and all the feeders are gone because we took them down yesterday. And it's very bittersweet. The birds are very confused.
He, along with his mom, the late Mary Bess Mulholland, voluntarily installed this fanciful bird feeding station a decade ago. Kelly replenishes the 12 bird feeders every week for garden visitors and staff to enjoy, as well as to sustain native and migratory birds, which he thrives on feeding.
This is the first time we've had to break the feeding cycle in 10 years back here.
As he talks, birds soar through the station in search of seed to no avail.
And I love experimenting with different kinds of seed and trying to see what they like and trying to accommodate everybody and also keeping the squirrels off. It's just kind of a game I play. And I really enjoy it now. But a couple days ago, something very strange happened. Not here, it was actually in my yard. In the morning, I noticed that there was a pine siskin that was all ruffled up and looked sick, and it was on the ground, which is strange.
The pine siskin is a tiny gregarious bird covered with streaky brown feathers with gold highlights. They live year-round in 10 western states, the Upper Great Lakes region, and portions of Canada where they breed, but are known to erupt or erratically move eastward, including into the south, across the U.S. in search of food. They flock to evergreen forests to feast, many times upside down on tender pinecone seeds, as well as to feeders supplied with tiny thistle and Niger seed.
This is a migratory bird many people are not aware of, very similar to a goldfinch. And so It was a few hours later, a friend of mine, Jack Williams, called me up and said that he had two pine siskins die in his yard. One of them died right at his feeder, fell over dead. That's very strange, you know. And then I get an email from a friend, Kitty Saunders, and she says she has two dead birds all the same day.
Turned out the pine siskin population is experiencing a bacterial salmonella outbreak originating in Oregon and California. Salmonellosis often begins as an intestinal tract infection in birds, causing diarrhea, ruffled feathers, and lethargy. Infected birds usually die within a few days.
And, of course, I'm very concerned about it. I'd never heard of this happening before. The pine siskins, sometimes they don't even make it this far south in the winter. In fact, half the time they don't.
The day Mulholland learned about imperiled pine siskins, the U of A Agriculture Extension Service issued a warning to Arkansans who feed birds.
There's this outbreak of salmonella among the eruptive pine siskins, and there's a fear that this is going to infiltrate other species, such as the goldfinch. Also, the droppings of the pine siskin might cause it to infect other ground-feeding birds, such as the white-throated sparrow, the juncos, mourning doves. There's all kinds of birds, robins. Lots of birds like to feed on the ground, as we all know. So this is, you know, I'm not qualified to be sounding the alarm, but I'm paying attention, and everything I'm reading so far is telling me to take the feeders down. Some might think that's an overreaction. It's a little too soon to say. I'm going to err on the side of safety. I think the most important thing, and this is just my opinion, is if you're feeding thistle or Niger seed or sunflower hearts, shelled sunflowers, I would stop immediately and cease that for at least a couple weeks, and let's see if we can break this cycle or help break this cycle.
Wild bird social media sites, including in Arkansas, have issued warnings to temporarily take down all bird feeders to reduce the risk of aggressive disease spread. Mulholland says pine siskins are known to erupt on the Ozarks in early May, although that's sporadic. He's taken down several bird feeders in his yard as well. Many bird enthusiasts this spring are eager to feed birds that survived severe winter storms this year.
All of us are kind of wondering exactly how bad that freeze impacted the bird population. I think we probably lost a pretty good number of birds. And then also that leaves everybody a little bit, say, stressed. I guess in my mind I'm thinking I'm doing something for the birds by trying to accommodate that stress and making sure it's easy for them to get a meal. But who knows? You know, it's springtime and it won't be long before there are natural food sources again.
UA Extension Service advises removing or cleaning out bird feeders and bird baths to prevent disease transmission at least through early May, periodically cleaning and disinfecting bird feeders and bird baths to kill pathogens is a good wildlife conservation practice. Experts warn that salmonella can also cause illness in humans and pets. And if you find a dead bird in your yard,
people are collecting birds and putting in a plastic bag and in the freezer. And then you can call the university extension, and they are testing birds. As I say, we're all learning about this as we speak.
The location and number of sick or dead birds can also be reported to the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. But by summer, Kelly Mulholland encourages everyone to come visit his bird feeding station at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks.
I can't think of a better place than to sit down on that bench over here. You don't even need binoculars. And you're gonna see 12 species of birds in 15 minutes, close up. And it's just a joy. And so everybody's welcome.
The Cornell Lab of Ornithology hosts an online guide to bird watching at allaboutbirds.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
You're listening to KUAF 91.3. At KUAF, we have an emphasis on local coverage. Nowhere else can you find and listen to programs like Community Spotlight, a locally produced segment from Pete Hartman that shines a light on groups focused on making this listening area a better place to live. Every weekday morning at 6:30 and 8:30, you hear from some of the region's most dedicated groups and people helping the Ozarks, the Arkansas River Valley, eastern Oklahoma, and southern Missouri be the best it can be. And if you missed it, you can access past segments when you go to KUAF.com and search programs. Help us to keep you informed on the good things happening in our community by making a gift right now during this fundraiser. It's quick. It's easy to do. You can contribute online at supportkuaf.com. Thank you. All contributions made before the end of today's Ozarks at Large help us meet the $250 challenge from Dick and Caroline Smith. If you can help us out and help us meet this challenge, contribute right now what you can afford at supportkuaf.com. And thank you.
Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring food and catering with a look at the largest caterers and event planners, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents North Forest Lights, an outdoor, family-friendly light and sound spectacular, open each Friday to Sunday after sunset through April 4th. Advance ticket reservations are recommended and available at crystalbridges.org.
This is Ozarks at Large, still on the front porch with Catherine Shields, our militant grammarian. Catherine, welcome back.
Thanks.
What are we going to talk about?
What is the distinguishing feature of a kangaroo's body? The one that children often focus on.
The pocket.
Yeah, the pouch. Part of the mamaroo that carries the baby after it's born.
Right.
We're going to look at kangaroo words with the focus on that part of the kangaroo that contains something related. So kangaroo words, a kangaroo word, according to dictionary.com, is a term of a word that contains its own synonym with the letters to spell that synonym already placed in the correct order.
So the synonym is inside the word that it's a synonym with.
For instance, a word like rambunctious contains its synonym. I keep wanting cinnamon roll, I guess. I don't know what's going on here. Contains the synonym raucous.
Oh.
He doesn't look like he's looking forward to this.
Buckle up, all right.
The shorter synonyms that are contained inside the kangaroo word are called joey words, just like the baby kangaroo.
I like that.
Okay, here we go with the quiz.
Okay, all right.
So what is the related word, the joey, that can be found in the word chocolate?
Chocolate, C-H-O. Cocoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's the powder made from roasted husk and ground seeds of the cacao.
Nice.
Which are used to make chocolate. Okay, what's the joey word in the kangaroo word? Masculine.
M-A-S-S-C-U-L-I-N-E. Not line. Muscle? That's not in there.
So what does masculine mean?
How would you define masculine?
Pertaining to or characteristic of?
A man.
Okay, so what's another word for man?
A male. Is male in there?
Yeah, masculine.
Oh, okay, yes.
M-A, and then add a line, you get L-E.
Oh, okay.
It's not together, it's just
I
in
gotcha.
The order.
Oh, boy, okay. This is okay. Okay.
When a plant flowers, it blossoms.
Uh-huh.
And the individual flowers on a plant can also be called blossoms. What's the joey word inside there?
And this isn't like an anagram. I mean, they're in order.
Yes.
Okay. B-L-O-S-S-O-M. Loom?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did you say bloom, B-L?
Yeah, that's what I said.
You said loom?
I said
loom. What's that got to do with blossom?
Well, that's why I was so surprised that I was right.
Remember, these are cinnamon rolls, okay?
Okay. Bloom, of course.
Yes, okay.
Plant where you're loomed. Or loom where you're planted, whatever that is. All right.
Here's something that was new to me. Though blossom and bloom are synonyms, blossom botanically refers to a flower that will bear fruit, while bloom refers to flowers in general.
Did not know that.
Me either. Okay, what's the joey word in chicken? It's not chick.
Oh, C-H-I-C-K-E-N. Hen!
Yes!
Okay.
Very
okay.
good.
Yeah, not bad.
Honorable means in accordance with or characterized by principles of honor, upright, or of high rank, dignity, and distinction, noble, illustrious, distinguished. But a shorter synonym appears in the word honorable. What is it?
H-O-N.
Not honor, by the way.
H-O-N-O-R-A-B-L-E.
And it was in that list I just read.
Oh, noble.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
To be deceased, Kyle, means what?
To be dead.
And did you just answer my follow-up quiz question?
Yes, I did.
What's that?
Dead is the joy word in deceased.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Dead has long been alive in the language, recorded in Old English and from a Germanic root before it. Deceased, meanwhile, is ultimate from the Latin decedere, probably not pronounced that way, meaning to go away or depart.
Oh.
So I guess you could decease from the house.
Or from your job, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't like saying that, though. That
no, no,
I'm not, right.
Nobody. If you said, well, Kyle is deceased from KUAF, I think a lot of people would be upset at that.
Well.
Either way, but especially if it... Okay. What does respite mean?
Like a break?
Mm-hmm. And what's the Joey word?
R-E-S-P-I-T-E. R-E... Rest!
Yes. Very good.
Okay, I like these.
Yes, well, you're done
kinda.
Now.
Oh.
A respite is a delay or cessation for a time, especially if anything distressing or trying, as in the pandemic, an interval of relief. Respite comes via some French transmogrifications from the Latin respectus, source of respect, literally looking back. Rest is a word of Germanic root, recorded in Old English. Yeah, that's enough of these down under word wonders.
Catherine Sherrills is our militant grammarian.
So watch me wallabies feed all together now. Tiny kangaroo down sport. Tiny kangaroo down. Tiny kangaroo down sport. Tiny kangaroo down. Keep me cockatoo cool, curl. Keep me cockatoo cool. Oh, dango acting the fool, curl. Just keep me cockatoo cool. All together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Lake Sequoia. KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today include Susanna Sitek and Jacqueline Froelich. Catherine Sherrills is our militant grammarian. Our conversations between Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette are part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. Today's show produced by Timothy Dennis at his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. Our theme written and performed by Daryl Sean. Before we leave, one more request that if you haven't yet and can't afford to do so, you contribute to keep local programming and public radio strong in your life by going to supportkuaf.com. All contributions made before the end of this hour of Ozarks at Large help us meet the challenge from great supporters of KUAF and Ozarks at Large, Dick and Caroline Smith of Rogers. You can make a contribution in any amount right now that helps us meet that challenge. And remember, for a gift of $60, one-time gift of $60, or by becoming a sustaining member at just $5 a month, you can select from gifts that include a KUAF coffee mug, a Scratching the Surface backpack with the Scratching the Surface logo, or an Ozarks at Large 30th anniversary poster as created by Chad Maupin. Details at supportkuaf.com. When you contribute to your public radio station, you keep us strong, you keep us independent, and you keep us committed, fully committed to local coverage through Ozarks at Large, Antoinette Grajeda's morning newscast, Community Spotlight, the great weekend music programs, and much more. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your continued support at any amount at supportkuaf.com. Back tonight at 7 o'clock with an updated edition of this program. Back tomorrow at noon with a completely brand new Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Please take care of yourself.